Outdoors. From Rangeley to Eastport, Fort Kent to Kittery, the Maine Outdoors is waiting for all of us to see. The mountains, lakes, and rivers, the wildlife, and the woods are just outside your doorway. So get outside and find it in the Maine Outdoors. Fishing and hunting, winter, spring, summer, and fall. If it happens in the Maine Outdoors, they talk about it all. Just tune in your radio to 103.9. Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your Outdoors Hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio to the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
And you know, it's hard to believe, but another Maine deer season has come to a close. And if you were lucky enough to get your buck, we don't want to hear from you. But if you didn't have any luck, call in and we'll cry on each other's shoulder. It's been a long deer season, and I guess it's the deer harvest has been pretty good. And we'll talk a little bit about that in just a moment.
And you didn't get your deer.
Oh, no, sir, but I haven't given up, right?
No.
No.
Okay.
Black powder season starts next week.
Yeah.
This week, I guess, yeah. Okay, welcome to our show. We have an interesting program lined up tonight. We think you'll really enjoy our guest. He's been here before, and he's a guy I've admired for many, many years, and we'll talk to him in just a minute and introduce him in just a second. First, the crew who make the show possible week after week. Our chief engineer is off there to the right, and he is known sometimes as the Baron of Fields Pond, Mr. Jim Layton. Take a bow, Jim.
Good evening, folks. Welcome aboard. It's going to be a great show tonight.
We hope so. We think so. And with him is the guy behind the toggle switches and the dials right now, and he is the sage of Grand Lake Stream, our friend Norm Plord.
Good evening, and welcome aboard.
And with us also in the studio tonight, my wife, Diane, who's graciously agreed to join us. And nice to have you here, Di.
Nice to be here.
I hope so.
And Di, you didn't get your deer.
No.
And Norm didn't get your deer.
On camera, I got it.
Trail camera. And Jim didn't get his deer.
No, but we know folks who did.
And You're not going to get any meat?
I've seen plenty.
Yeah, well.
You've seen some.
It's not over. It's not over yet. And our co-host, you want me to introduce you, right?
Okay, I'm sorry.
He's our co-host.
Excuse me.
He's a registered master guide. He's written some great books on fishing, my friend Bob Lehman.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you so much,
Bob. Nice
to
have you
here.
Thank you
very much.
And now, to our guest tonight, he has been on our show before. He writes a column for the Northwood Sporting Journal called The Hiker's Life, and he's written a number of books on hiking, and he's a guy who knows his way around the trails, not only in Maine, but all the way. He's been down the AT a couple of times, at least, and he just finished, listen to this now, folks at home, listen to this. He just finished hiking the Pacific Crest Trail, which runs from San Diego all the way to the north border of Oregon, 2,650 miles. He wore out three pairs of boots. He lost 32 pounds, and he's in better shape now than he was in high school. Mr. Kerry Kish. Kerry, welcome to the show.
Oh, good evening, folks. Nice to be here again. Yes, I'm Bangor High School size and weight here.
So. Are you really?
Yes,
you're a lucky guy.
What year were you at Bangor High?
I graduated in 1977.
Oh, okay. 77. Yeah.
Had a 28 waist, and back to a 28 waist. Not for, not for
that's
long.
Fantastic.
A 28 waist. Now, Bob, Bob, can you and I say that?
Well, I was 1948. I graduated, and I weighed 119 pounds.
Okay.
Now I weigh 170. I got a 38 waist.
All right. I'm not going to divulge my weight or my waist at this point.
Well,
anyway.
I've had a few beers since I've gotten home, so it's not a 28 anymore. So.
Okay. Well, you get plenty of room to put some weight back on.
Yes, sir. Yeah,
nice to have you here, Kerry. We look forward to talking about your exciting adventure on the Pacific Crest Trail. Right now, though, we want to remind you, if you want to be on our program tonight, if you have a question for Kerry, you can reach us at our statewide toll-free number.
1-800-966-1039, and you have to dial the whole number, even if you're local.
Yes, sir.
1-800-966-1039, and that's our call letters, 1039. That should be easy to remember.
You bet. And if you're new to the show, we want to remind you, you're listening to a program that's been around for over 20 years. You're listening to us on the Voice of Maine News Talk Network, 101.3, 103.9, and 95.1 in Rockland.
FM.
You bet, FM. Okay, let's time now for Outdoor Digest, brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. would like to remind you again, if you're looking for a gift the last minute, what makes an ideal gift for a sportsman, of course, is a subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal, and it makes a wonderful gift for any sportsman in your family. If you'd like to sign up and get a gift subscription for somebody you know and love, you can call Alicia during the week in our office at 732-4880, 732-4880. And also, I want to remind you, if you're interested in buying any of my books or Bob's books, you can check them out on our brand-new website, which is www.sportingjournal.com, all lowercase. And just when you get to that website, just click on Outdoor Books, and it'll give you all the instructions if you're looking for a book for somebody for Christmas. Let's see. Maine deer season has just about wound up, although there is a black powder season for a week or 2 weeks, depending on which part of the state you might live. And it looks like you're going to have plenty of tracking snow. If you may have to go on snowshoes, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But you will have some tracking snow for the end of the week. And as far as the rifle season goes, I checked out the IFNW now has a the harvest data on deer is like it's real time. We used to have to wait until April to get the numbers. Now it's there on the website. If you go to a Fish and Wildlife website, and they have a complete list of all the harvest data, and you can even break it down by townships. And I took a look today, and the total so far, according to Fish and Wildlife, the total deer harvest as of yesterday, 24,139. I think they were predicting close to 30,000, so I'm not sure whether they're below projections or they just don't have all the data. But anyway, you can check that out, and you can get a complete breakdown of I went to Zone 1, for example, up in northern Aroostook. They had taken 51 deer in 26, which is down in our neck of the woods, Norm, 1,627 deer.
That's so you where could, I
big difference.
Yeah, so yep. I guess the hunting's a little better down here than it might be in Aroostook County. However, I saw a photo yesterday of a 20-point, listen to this, Jim, a 20-point non-typical 210-pounder was Whoa. Taken in the Allegash last day by a guide up there.
Wow.
And you should see the rack on this creature. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
You can get a chance to see it, by the way, in the January issue of the Northwood Sporting Journal.
Can't wait.
You are.
All right. So anyway, the deer season's open. We hope you had a good, safe hunt. And I was just kidding earlier. If you did have luck and you want to talk about your hunt, we'd be glad to hear from you at 1-800-966-1039. Right now, I think it's time. Oh, one other thing. Oh,
too late.
All right. Too late.
All right.
Too late.
All right. I think we're going to have a fishing report.
Hold that thought.
All right.
Boss Bass, and you work for me.
Yeah.
This is my rock.
All right, Bob Lehman is going to talk to you tonight. He's going to lecture you in a very, very low-key way about safe ice.
Yes.
Bob, talk to us.
And I want you to get in here with me because you're a pretty expert on safe ice. I was looking at your article right here, Ice, Is It Safe? And that's a great article as you've written there, and you've covered all bases. But
Thank
I
you.
Just wanted to mention that this time of year, man, it can be real, real, real dangerous.
Very sketchy.
You know,
yep.
And then, of course, we got snow coming.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's just enough ice out there to hold the snow, and you don't know what you're looking at, do
yep.
you?
That's
you don't
when
know
it
how
gets,
much.
It's dangerous.
You know, if
yep.
you're going to step on the ice, you better have a spud or an auger, whatever you want to call it, with you
mm-hmm.
and check it out. Because I've done a lot of beaver trapping, you know, and late December and January over the years. Nothing lately, of course, but my younger years. And we always carried a spud. And we checked it and made sure we had lots of ice.
Now hold the phone. Stop yeah. the tape.
What is a spud?
How many people out there
carry a spud?
No, what a spud is. Do you know?
I don't.
You don't? Diane, do you know what a spud is?
No, I do not.
Norm?
Yes, I grew up with one hanging around the house.
All right, Jim, you must know what a spud
I
is.
I do, and I've okay. used them many times.
Yeah, me too.
Oh,
it's just it's a long piece of pipe with a chisel on the end, and they call it a spud.
Yeah, a lot of
There's
people make them.
There's also a short one that you peel pulp with. That's the one I'm familiar with,
yeah.
too.
Yeah.
yeah,
yeah.
Well, a hatchet isn't long enough, but a spud has got a handle to it, yes. so you could be upright,
yeah. Yeah.
you know, and tap it along as you go. Well, you don't tap it. You drive it in to make sure you've got at least 2 inches, if not more. And if it goes in and out of sight, man, you better get off that ice
oh,
fast.
Yeah. You're right.
And you want to stay away from inlets and outlets yep. and shore places.
Yes, sir.
The wind is blowing on shore. It'll take that ice out in just a matter of minutes sometime, any kind of wind. And if there's springy places, too, in some of these lakes and ponds, it just doesn't freeze over any time. And you really should know about those if you're going to snowmobile them and so forth, as you know, Paul.
Yeah, I think that we've had a number of snow sledders go through the ice and drown.
Yeah.
And so if for snow sledders, I think it's double caution. Don't go anywhere where you haven't been and any area that you're not familiar with, because you just never know. It can be dangerous.
That's right.
Well, especially this early in the season.
Yep. Yeah. Yep.
You know, Fields Pond skimmed over this morning, the total pond for the first time.
Did it?
This
wow.
year. Yep.
Yeah. Well, no ice on Branch yet. Still blowing ice white caps out there. Yeah.
No.
Yep.
You said skim, Jim.
Yes, and
skim.
I mean a skim of ice.
Yeah, don't go walking it.
I don't think I'd walk on skim. No,
the little brook beside our house is froze over enough, and I watched a buck walk across it the other day.
No, you did?
Yes.
Wow. Boy, I hope he can swim.
He did all right.
All right, so anyway, that's the word.
Fall through the ice now. Yeah. You can't get back up on the shore again. I mean, you've got to fight through ice to get to get. You can't get on the ice. You know, it'll break away on you.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
And one thing to know is the experts claim you got to have at least 2 to 4 inches of good, solid blue ice before you venture forth. So remember that. If you're with a group of people, it's a good idea to go in single file.
That's a good idea. That is a good idea. And I went through the ice once.
So, like, I'd have Norm go first.
it's like being
then
the point
go
man.
Go second, now go third.
It's like being the point man. Right.
Then Di can come along there.
Right. Right.
It's like being the point man in Vietnam. You know?
Right.
Same idea, yeah.
But, you know, I went through the ice with snowshoes on before there were snowmobiles.
Oh,
that gives you an idea how old I am, probably. But I went through the ice, and there was a fellow with me. And it's pretty dangerous to trap alone. So I always went with somebody.
Yeah.
And there's single trappers out there right now that are really pushing it, I'll tell you. But anyway, I went through the ice. I was headed into shore on the snowmobiles. There wasn't a lot of ice on the pond. But I went into shore, and I broke away on through the bushes, because wind blows the bushes, and they don't freeze up. They're all tinkly, you know. Places that's just half an inch of ice or something. So right through with snowmobile with snowshoes on. And all the way up to my waist, I couldn't get down through the bushes to get to my snowshoes. So there I was.
Hard to swim with snowshoes on.
Well, you know, there was no way, Jose. And my buddy came over with a long pole, two long poles. He ran one across, and then he came out with another one that he was using to poke over to where I was. So I could, and between the two of us, I got out of there. But I'm telling you, if I'd have been alone, I'd have froze right there.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how dangerous it can be. Oh, yeah. Things like that you don't think of.
Yeah.
You just don't.
Yeah. That reminds me, one time I was deer hunting. I walked across a pond, went completely through.
Yeah.
Up to my waist.
Yeah.
And if it's cold, you know, once you get out,
yeah,
you're still in danger because of hyperthermia.
Yeah.
Anyway. Okay, well, thanks for that.
Well,
good report.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate that.
Yep.
Again, if you joined us late, our guest is Kerry Kish. He's a hiker he just finished the Pacific Crest Trail out in California on the West Coast, and we'll be talking to him momentarily. Right now, though, before we get to Kerry, we have a trivia question, and it's that time of the month. It's the first of the month, which means we can part with a subscription to the Northwood Sporting Journal if you have an answer to Bob's question.
And the question tonight is, where does the Appalachian Trail begin?
All right. You ponder that. Call us at 1-800-966-1039. We'll be right back. Okay, we had a lawyer call in to just explain that wanted to say, well, which end of the trail you're talking about, the northern terminus or the southern terminus? Well, we always talk about leaving in the southern terminus and coming north. But some people go the other way, right, Kerry?
They do. I've got a friend out there right now. She's gone from Katahdin, and she's almost to the end of the trail in
All
Georgia.
Right. So the answer we're looking for you attorneys out there, is that we want you to tell us where the southern terminus of the Appalachian Trail actually begins. And we have a caller standing by.
Yes, we do.
Is this the lawyer?
Yes, it is.
Well, good evening. Welcome to Maine Outdoors.
I was thinking it was called Springer Mountain.
Springer Mountain.
George.
Bob Lehman, is that right?
Absolutely right, and we have a winner.
Is that right, Kerry?
It sure is. Yep. 3,600-foot Springer Mountain.
We have a man who's been there twice on with us in the studio. Where are you calling from, sir?
Mount Desert Island.
Okay. You must know Kerry, huh?
No, actually, I don't.
Well, he lives down near you.
Maybe spell his last name for people.
His last name is K-I-S-H.
Oh, there it is. Okay, thank you.
Yeah. Well, congratulations. That is the right answer. How did you know that?
Oh, just from watching television over the years.
Yeah. All right. Well, congratulations. We are going to sign you up for a subscription to Bob's favorite publication, the Northwood Sporting Journal.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, our pleasure. And if you, unless you have another comment, we're going to put you on hold here and have you talk to, I think, Jim or Norm, okay?
Okay.
Any other thoughts tonight?
Well, I remember this fellow I went to school with. He was going to hike the Appalachian Trail back in 72. And he went off, but then a week later he was back. I said, what happened? He said, oh, the strap on my backpack broke. I remember seeing him sitting there with the backpack, dejected look on his face, and I thought it was a great lesson for life. if you're discouraged by that easily,
yeah,
on something that
probably won't want to
trip.
Yeah, probably don't want to do the AT.
You got to be committed.
Yeah.
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 So.
Yeah. All right.
That's my first memory of the AT.
Okay. Well, stay on the line, would you? And we'll get your address, all right?
Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for listening. Okay, that was the correct answer. Springer Mountain in Georgia. And if you start in Maine, of course, you start where? Pomola Peak, right?
Top of Katahdin. Baxter Peak.
Baxter Peak,
yep.
Yeah. All right.
What are you drawing now? Face?
Oh, you know, I'm a doodler.
You're a doodler. Yeah. Well, also, you're quite an artist.
Well, thank you.
I've seen some of your stuff.
Well, thank you.
I saw a picture of Laura the other day with a fly rod in her hand.
Well, that was a Grand Lake Stream. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I bet it was. I know the spot.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice, nice picture. Well done. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. Our guest again is Kerry Kish. Kerry, again, nice to have you on board tonight.
Oh, thanks,
and,
guys.
And congratulations to you, by the way, for your incredible accomplishment. I have said the greatest respect and admiration for somebody who can have the stamina, perseverance, and the soul to do something like this. Good for you.
Well, it's a long damn way, as Paul. I'm glad I did it. It was a long, hard journey, but I'm glad to be home, too.
All right. Pacific Crest Trail. Now, as we mentioned earlier, you've done the AT twice.
Yes, sir.
Was this tougher than the AT?
I think it was. This one, it's longer than the AT by about almost 500 miles.
Is it? Yeah.
So the AT is roughly 2,200, so this is another 450. And you've got so many different environments. You've got desert, you've got mountains, you've got snow and ice, you've got 100-degree heat. You've got 14,000-foot mountains you've got to cross. So
you actually did cross a 14,000-foot mountain.
Yeah, Mount Whitney.
Mount Whitney.
Which technically isn't on the Pacific Crest Trail, but the weather was great, and I couldn't miss it. So I jumped up onto the summit.
So for the benefit of our listeners who may not understand this or be aware, Pacific Crest Trail starts in where? San Diego?
50 miles east of San Diego. It's one of the nation's national scenic trails, just like the AT. It's the second longest of our long trails. The Continental Divide is the longest, and the AT is third. So it gives you a little reference there. And it goes through, starts at the Mexican border east of San Diego, goes the spine of California, through the Sierras to the Cascades, and then through Oregon and Washington to the Canadian border.
And the conditions were obviously different than the AT.
They were brutal, actually.
The heat?
What's that?
The heat?
No, actually, believe it or not, I was most worried about the desert, to be honest. But it turned out it was a pretty cold and rainy winter. So the desert was in full bloom. There was a super bloom of flowers, and it was cool. It was a very cool spring. I actually had snow in the desert mountains, which I wasn't expecting. I don't think anybody was. So that was a surprise. But in the Sierra Nevada, which is you're up 8, 9, 10, 11, 12,000 feet for 400 or 500 miles in the Sierras, and through the spring and into early summer, it just continued to snow. So you had anywhere in the Sierra 165 to 210% of the normal snowpack.
Did you really? So you started this in April, right?
I left the Mexican border on April 3rd,
And I hiked north for 702 miles to the start of the Sierras at a place called Kennedy Meadows. And there you had to make a decision. Were you going to push on through the Sierra with this enormous snowpack? It was basically going to be a winter mountaineering trip. You were going to need snowshoes, crampons, ice axe, the whole shit, man.
You didn't expect that.
I was prepared for some of that,
yeah.
But I was also prepared for there to be a whole lot less snow. And it had just continued to snow, and it was more than I wanted to do at the time. Now, some people push through. I decided to flip north from that point to southern Oregon. I had watched I'd been following the NOAA snow maps. So I traveled north. It took me like 1.5 days to travel north. And then I began to hike south. I figured I would hike south through lower elevation mountains where there was going to be some snow, but it was going to melt ahead of me in the higher elevations, and that's exactly what happened.
So you took a different trail?
No, same trail.
Yeah?
Yeah, same trail, but I went north, and I kind of pieced it together. I hiked from the border north for 700 miles, then went to Oregon and hiked south, and I connected those dots at Kennedy Meadows. So by the time I hiked back south through the Sierra Nevada, the rivers had dropped. They weren't dangerous anymore, and the snow levels had dropped, and it was just a wonderful, wonderful summer in the Sierras. But everybody who had pushed straight...
Did you get back from the mic just a little there, a little too close?
Sorry. Yeah. Anybody who had pushed through the Sierras and gone straight south to north had a pretty rough time of it. And most people said they should have died. It was
that
so
bad,
horrible.
Huh?
Yeah. Incredible river crossings, deep snow, terrible weather. So,
Your sleeping bag that you use, is it a 0-degree bag?
It was a 10-degree bag, and I'm glad I had it. It was a down bag with a Pertex, kind of a impermeable, waterproof cover on it, and I had a really good tent, super light tent, very sturdy. Gas stove. I had all the usual gear. Very lightweight, good quality stuff.
And you were always warm enough?
Yeah, most of the time.
Most of the time.
Not always.
Yeah.
When I got into the northern climbs there in the Cascades, it got pretty rough.
Did it? Yeah.
Wet and cold.
Yeah. So you average. We talked about this before the program. If you covered 2,600 miles in was it 7 months, 6 months?
Yeah, it's 187 days, a little over 6 months.
Yeah. Okay. We're going to take a break, Kerry. And you folks at home, stay with us. We'll be back with more right here on Maine Outdoors. Okay, we're back with our guest, Kerry Kish, who writes a hiker's column for the Northwood Sporting Journal. And as we said earlier, Kerry has hiked the AT a couple of times and recently completed a really ambitious trek up the Pacific Crest Trail on the west coast of this country. And before the break, he was explaining to us about how the routes he took and some of the bad weather he encountered. I'm sure on a trip like that, 2,600 miles, there had to be some things happen to you that were, I don't know, scary, but were... problematic for you. And you mentioned we were talking during the break. Some of the best conversations take place during the break.
Yeah.
But you mentioned that you ran into some trouble health-wise, right?
Yeah. During that first 700-mile segment, when I was coming into Kennedy Meadows at the start of the Sierra Nevada, I ended up getting a really, really bad diarrhea, which, boy, that's a hiker's worst nightmare. I was carrying Imodium, so I was taking that. But then it just got worse and worse and worse. And it was at that point that I had decided not to push straight through the Sierra, but to flip up north, travel up north to southern Oregon, and hike south to connect those dots. And while I was traveling, I just got sicker and sicker. And I ended up taking about a week off in southern Oregon before I could even start out again. And I ended up having to go to the hospital and get checked out. Thought it was giardia, so they gave me something for that. And turns out I had a what they think is a norovirus. But I was
I was coming and going pretty bad yeah. there for a while.
And you
and it really took obviously it took a lot out of me physically.
Oh yeah.
And it was I was pretty weak for a couple 3 weeks even into the track after I got going.
I bet, yeah. So did you have moments where you said, maybe I better hang this up?
Oh, not a chance. Failure is not an option for me.
Oh, I noticed that.
No, you're going to have to kill me to get me off the trail.
Yeah.
People break bones. They run out of money. There's so many reasons why people quit. I just never considered that.
Did you have any regular communication with your wife during this trek?
I did all the time. I carried a Garmin InReach Mini, a GPS satellite communicator, so she could track me. Well, anybody who had the link could track my hike and know where I was at any one point. And I had fairly decent cell service, so I was communicating that way and posting on Facebook and that kind of thing.
And I know we've talked about this before, but I'm always interested. I've done a little bit of backpacking, very little, to hunt in Colorado, and we had a cold period out there. And I just wonder, what do you have a filter pump that you use for water?
Most everybody carried what's called a Sawyer filter system.
Yeah.
But I didn't. I don't like it. They tend to clog, and they're a pain to use. Well, people like them, but I don't. I carry Aquamira chemical treatment. It's a liquid treatment. You put these drops together and
like the old iodine tablets.
Kind of, sort of. Only a little stronger. Kills more stuff.
Yeah.
And that's how I treated my water.
Yeah.
So, and I treated a fair amount so that I
yeah.
didn't get sick if I could help it.
Do you believe in the so-called sherry pens, those ultraviolet pens you dip? I know I had one of those, but I don't trust it. I don't know. It just doesn't seem like it would work, but I guess they do, right?
People carry them, but always as a backup
mm-hmm.
for really bad water.
Yeah.
I've never used one, actually, so I don't know.
Yeah. You've had Giardia before on the trail?
A couple, three times, yeah.
Kind of goes with it, I guess.
It's Giardia, Lyme. You know, you spend time out there, and you're going to get stuff.
Yeah. What about food? What's your diet consist of mostly?
Anything you could get in front of me, pretty much. If I think, Paul, if I was awake and standing and breathing, I was eating. I was eating 4,000 and 5,000 calories a day.
I bet you were.
Oh, my goodness.
I mean, and you still lost 32 pounds.
Still lost 32 pounds.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how much. I shocked even myself. I did a couple of analyses. I looked at my garbage bag and kind of picked it apart after I got into town one time, and I counted up all the calories, and it's just extraordinary. And you know, if it said Little Debbie's on it, or Mrs. Freshley's, or Oreos, or whatever, all the crap you could get into your system, you would eat it.
Even a ring ding, right?
Everything. So I'll tell you what, I it's one of the beauties of long distance hiking for me is the ability to eat and drink anything and everything.
Yeah,
and now I'm missing all that.
Yeah. So you didn't have any one mainstay. I mean, you know, Gorp, you eat a lot of Gorp, you do macaroni
You know, you
cheese.
Get tired of stuff.
Mm. Yeah,
you'd eat peanut butter and bread for a while, then you'd go to cheese and crackers and jerky and get tired of that, and you'd eat tuna and whatnot and get tired of that.
Yeah.
And you kind of cycle through it, and in the end, none of it looks good. And and towards the end, the more junk you want to eat, you really do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But once in a while you take a break and hit a restaurant, right? Isn't that possible?
Every possible time. I don't pass a good restaurant ever.
Yeah.
And my lovely wife Fran drove across country and met me in Southern Oregon, so she kind of shadowed the last 800 miles of my hike. So every few days at a road crossing, she would meet me, and I'd get to camp. If it worked out timing-wise, I'd get to camp with her. She'd fix me a meal, take me to a grocery store, that kind of thing. So it was nice.
When you're one of the things I noticed when I was out in Colorado in my little one-man tent is that, and I've always had this problem, I don't sleep well at altitude, and just nature of me, I guess. Even when I'm exhausted, if it's altitude, I don't. You know, we were only at 10,000 feet, and I still don't sleep well because of the thinner air. Was that a problem for you up in that high country?
I don't suffer from that. I'm a lucky guy, Paul.
Yeah.
I lay my head on the pillow, and I'm out.
You're out.
And you know, at the beginning of the hike, when it was getting dark early still, I would sleep 12 hours.
Did you really?
12 hours. Yep.
Yeah.
And we have a thing out there on the trail called Hiker Midnight. And that's kind of when it starts getting dark in the evening. That's hiker midnight, and you end up going to bed.
Right. Yeah.
And then sun comes up, and you're cup of coffee, and you're on the trail, and you're hiking all day long.
Do you feel safe on these trails? I've heard and read that sometimes you get some wackos there. Has that ever been an issue for you, or a problem?
No.
No. Feel comfortable on the trails?
No, and even, you might want to ask that question of women out there. There's a lot of single women out there doing these hikes on the AT, the Pacific Crest Trail, and it just impresses the daylights out of me. They're so capable and so confident and so strong, and they're not bothered by this stuff, and I'm just glad to see that. It's really cool.
Yeah.
You carry a weapon with you?
No.
Some do.
I know some do. I found out after my AT hike, when I had some people together at my house in Maine here, who carried and who didn't. You wouldn't have known on the trail.
Yeah, they don't talk about it.
I didn't see any point in it.
Yeah. How long did it take you? How many days?
The Pacific Crest Trail was 187 days of pretty much continual movement.
Yeah, and how much a day did you go on an average?
I was doing, in the beginning, maybe 15 miles a day. I started out pretty good right out of the box. But, Canada's a long ways away. And it's getting late in the season, and you figure you got to step up the pace. So when I got to Oregon, I started doing bigger miles, 20, 22 miles a day. And then it was 25 miles a day every day. And, the days are getting shorter. So you're getting up with the sun. You're going to bed when it's dark. And you're just hiking all day to get where you need to get to. And then we had rain and snow at the end, so it's tough.
Yeah. Wow. Well, we're going to take a short profit break here. Bob Lehman wants to remind you about one of our sponsors, General Appliance and Brewer.
Absolutely. And why would anybody not go to General Appliance and Brewer if they wanted a gas appliance or an electrical appliance? And that is owned by Al Elkin, and they are located at 5191 Center Street in Brewer, and they offer a full range of appliances, gas and electric, as I mentioned, and they would welcome being known as your all-around appliance dealer, offering the servicing of anything you purchase there, which is no small deal today, and do that with the big box store and see how you can make out.
You bet.
Huh? And they also have parts, Paul, as you know. You've got parts and stuff over there, and the big thing they carry, I think, is their compost toilets, you know.
Ride the wave.
Yes, yeah. Thank you, James. I appreciate it. Have you ever used one of those, Jim?
I most certainly have.
There you are. So have I, and you have not, Paul.
I have never sat on on one of those in my life.
Have you, Gary?
Not.
No?
And, you feel
and
like
Di,
a king.
Di, you haven't either. And the many places you've camped and things you've been, you've never used. Well, they are an amazing tool. There's no question about it. The big thing with those, there's no mosquitoes.
No mosquitoes.
Put them in a closet.
No leach fields. No septic tanks.
Absolutely.
No electricity or batteries.
That's right.
No spiders.
No plug-in.
In the outhouse.
Put them in the closet. Throw a handful of compost in there every 6 months.
And you don't have to get a visit every 2 years by the cuck-a-sucka truck, right?
Nope.
And considering all they do, they're quite reasonably priced. You ought to check them in. Check them out in there. It's really something. So anyway. General Appliance and Brewer. Easy to get to.
We patronize them and urge you to do so.
We certainly do.
Nicest people you'll deal with.
Yes, sir.
Yes, they are.
Thank you. All right. Back to Kerry. Again, if you want to ask Kerry a question, we invite you to call at 1-800-966-1039. That's a toll-free statewide number.
How's the wildlife on the trail?
Yeah, that was my next question.
Well, there was plenty of it. You didn't see as much as I know was out there. I saw a handful of black bears. Always running away from me.
That's good.
Plenty of elk.
Scary any gun?
Did I?
Yeah.
No, I didn't. And I didn't see anyone else who did, but I'm sure they're out there. Lots of deer. Matter of fact, lots of nasty deer who stole people's trekking poles. Would run off with your socks.
Is that right?
Boots. Yeah, you had to keep everything battened down. We had a deer even chew a hole in one of my trail mates' tents.
No kidding.
Of course, they weren't as bad as the deer mice in Washington.
Boy.
Chewed through everything.
Anything, wow. Yeah.
Made Swiss cheese out of my rain jacket, tore some big holes out of my tent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was nothing you could do. They did it right in the middle of the night while you were sleeping.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So there was wildlife, all right.
Oh, yeah. Plenty of that. No fishing.
I didn't do any fishing.
You probably went by some beautiful pools.
In the Sierras, Northern California.
Oh, yeah.
You could just see them right there.
Oh, I'll bet you could.
Yeah.
Were the Sierras the most majestic of all the mountain ranges you walked through?
Yeah, you know, I'd been through them once before, 20-some years ago, and they were. You're up above 10,000 feet, more or less.
Most of the time?
For about 400 miles.
Are you really?
And like I explained to you earlier, by the time I got there, the snow had melted since I hiked from north to south. Most of the snow had melted, so it was just fabulous weather. I hiked shorts and T-shirt right up to the top of Mount Whitney, which was right the end of July, early August, and just fabulous. Streams were beautiful. I only took off my boots to ford streams three times. And it's the kind of place where you can't take a bad picture. Just beautiful granite spires, snow fields, blue lakes, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Oh, and wildflowers.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way I hiked the trail, I had wildflowers all through the Southern California desert up to the Sierra. Then I flipped up to Oregon and started hiking south, back to the Sierra. I had spring and summer all over again.
Right.
So I had wildflowers for 400 miles.
Yeah, must have been gorgeous.
Yeah.
And you must have some incredible photographs, I would imagine.
I got 11,000 photos. I'm starting to sort through those right now.
Yeah.
So
now, will you be preparing like a lecture that you can present to people and tell them about your trip with a slideshow and all that?
I will. I'm already booking some appearances now, so I've got to get that all together and get it out there so people can. I'd love to come to any library, business, organization. I'd love to tell the tale.
If somebody wants to get in touch with you, I would think, how do they reach you, Kerry?
Well, you can find me on Facebook, Kerry Kish. You can find me email, mainoutdoors@aol.com.
There you go.
Yeah, so that's two good ways.
All right. Anything else of note on that trip, either good or bad, that you could talk about?
Well, I had a good stat for you, Paul. You asked me how hard it was, or maybe Diane did. From one end of the Pacific Crest Trail to the other, it takes 489,418 feet of climbing, of elevation gain. Mm. So that's
say that again.
489,000 feet of climbing.
Are you a mountain climber?
I'm not.
He is now.
Yeah.
Yes.
But that's kind of roughly equivalent to climbing Katahdin with a full backpack about every day and a half for 6 months.
Did you
hear what he just said?
Yeah. Did you prep physically for this before you left, or did you just get in shape as you went?
I tried. And you know, you get so busy planning and doing other things, and I did a few hikes. But, you know, I'm walking all the time.
Yeah.
I'm hiking all the time.
Yeah,
I'm in reasonably good shape.
Yeah.
But I did most of my training right out there.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the way most people do it.
Yeah.
You think you're going to get real, real psyched for it and ready, but you're
Did you have any sponsors?
I didn't. I'm self-sponsored.
Well, you could probably get some. I bet you could.
I probably could. We'll have to work on that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you got acclimated to this super thin air after a while? I mean, I know climbing is tough enough at sea level, but you do it at 10,000, 11,000 feet. Man, there's a lot of gasping goes on. Did you actually get used to that after a while?
You do get used to it. I did anyway. Everybody reacts differently to altitude, for sure. And I didn't know how this was going to work on my 60-year-old body.
I was hoping you'd say that.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you to say that.
You were hoping you'd say what?
His age.
Oh, his age, yeah.
When I started to get into the Sierras, 10,000 feet, you know, my pack has between the shoulder straps, there's a sternum strap to tighten it up.
Yeah.
Well, I had to keep loosening it and loosening it, and it was getting sore there in my chest, and I didn't realize what the heck was going on. Well, breathing so darn hard, and
your lungs were expanding.
Yeah. So that's the way. You know, it took some getting used to.
Yeah, yeah. Would you ever do this again?
Not a chance.
No.
not a chance. Now,
well, kind of a dumb question, I guess, but for a 60-year-old guy who's in great shape, who loves what he does, are there any challenges left? You're going to start doing the Himalayas or what?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. You know, like I told you earlier, Paul, I've got some books to write, and I can't get them all done if I don't spend some time sitting home.
Yeah. So you got to go to work, right?
And I got to be fair to my wife, too. Yeah. But funny thing, coming home, my wife and I drove cross-country in the camper from Washington back to Maine. And I hadn't been to the Rockies in years and years, and I fell in love with the Rockies.
Oh, aren't they great?
Yeah. All over again.
I love them out there.
And I swore to my wife that I would not hike the Continental Divide Trail. And but. I think I've already reneged on that. So may be that challenge.
They do that, yeah. That would be a wonderful. The Rockies are something special.
They're amazing, amazing.
Yeah. Wow, what an exciting adventure you lead. And now you're going to slow down and do some writing.
I'm working on that now. I've got a book of my my hiking columns to put together. I'm working on a beer and hiking book, and that's only going to get together if I stay home a while.
Yeah, I think we covered this the last time you were here, but your nickname on the Appalachian Trail was, I think, Beer Man.
And I took that on the Pacific Crest Trail as well.
Oh, did you?
Okay. Yes. Now, interesting you should ask that, because I did. I had a lot of people asking me what my BPM was on the Pacific Crest Trail.
Your BPM?
Beers per mile.
Oh, beers per mile.
Now, I just did tally that up the other day. It was a disappointing 0.189 beers per mile.
Is that right? Yeah.
That was a little less than on the Appalachian Trail.
Yeah.
So I must add more time on my hands on the AT.
Yeah. What kind of do you have a certain brand of boot that you prefer?
I do, and I'm happy to tell you about that. Loa Renegade.
Who makes those?
Loa. They're a German company, L-O-W-A.
I
found a pair of these a few years before the AT. I've had six pairs of them. I've hiked 6,000 miles in them, and I've never had a blister.
No kidding. Mm.
They fit me just perfectly. You know how boots are such an individual thing.
Oh, yeah.
So maybe they work for you, maybe they don't.
Yeah.
But I'm a lucky guy. And they don't take any breaking in. Loa Renegade Gore-Tex midsize.
You can't buy them locally. You have to buy them online, or?
I don't know. I don't know if Beans carries them or not. I order them. I know what I need and what size at this point. So I order them two at a time, two pair at a time.
L-O-W-A?
L-O-W-A. Fantastic.
What about socks?
Same pairs of socks. I've not the same pair, but I have this sock combination that works as well. Eastern Mountain Sports has a mid-weight sock, mostly synthetic, and then a white liner sock that works. And I've had that combination through 6,000 miles of hiking, and I won't change it.
So it's a liner.
It's a nylon, synthetic spandex liner sock, and then this mid-weight sock.
Is that like a wool sock, or is it a combination?
It's wool and polyester.
Yeah.
But between the socks and the boots.
So it's a combination that keeps you from getting the blisters.
I guess. Yeah. I don't play with it.
Yeah.
It's a combination that works. I just feel real lucky, and that's a lot of miles to put on your feet and not to be lucky enough to not get any blisters.
So yeah.
It's pretty special.
Wow. Diane, do you have any other questions for
Carrie? I just wondered, I knew that in the AT hikes, he likes to take his tent and off by himself. Did you do that for sleeping?
I camped in as many high and wild spots as I could.
Okay, so I wondered if you separate from the...
Oh, yeah. And that's the beauty of the Pacific Crest Trail. You know, the AT is beautiful. I love it, love it. But you're in the trees of the majority of the time, and views are something you're really looking for. On the Pacific Crest Trail, you are out in the open 80% of the time.
Are you really?
You're exposed to all the elements, whether you're in the desert, you're in the mountains.
Yeah.
So I was camping above the trees, out in the open most of the time, which means you're exposed to, obviously, the elements a lot of times. So it's
what brand tent do you like?
I carried a Big Agnes tent. It's one of those super lightweight, but still sturdy.
How much does it weigh?
A little over 2 pounds.
Ooh, that is light.
It's about the size of a loaf of bread.
Yeah.
My sleeping bag was, yay big, about the size of a baby's head.
Yeah.
Tent about this big.
Who makes that?
Big Agnes is that's the brand.
That's the
brand. It was the Copper Spur Ultralight One Man.
Wow.
So
What is your pack weigh on average?
17 to 20 pounds base weight. Mm-hmm. Pretty light, but not super light like a lot of the folks.
Yeah.
And then you add food and water to that, so it could have been upwards of 32, 35 pounds
with your food and water. Yeah.
And beer.
In beer.
I never carried beer. I carried it in my belly.
About TP?
I carried plenty of that, and I carried a little shovel so I could do the leave no trace thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I have a thing called the Deuce of Spades. It's a titanium pooper scooper. Weighs a quarter ounce.
That's so well.
Oh, my word.
So good point, though. To stay healthy, we all carried, you had your toilet paper and your pooper scooper. Yeah. You had to do that properly.
Yeah.
And then hand sanitizer.
Oh, yeah.
So you could clean up after yourself.
Yeah.
Travel wipes, baby wipes, all of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And there's no quicker way to get yourself sick out there than to do that.
Yeah.
All.
Oh, I'll bet.
Yeah.
Is there any campgrounds there at all, or just you find your own?
There are designated campsites along the way, just all very primitive. Occasionally, you'll hit a Forest Service campground. Mm-hmm. I navigated with an app on my iPhone.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
It's for the Pacific Crest Trail, and it has campsites and mountains, elevation. You can see yourself real time on the trail on your phone.
How do you charge that?
Yeah, that was my question.
I carry a battery pack, a 10,000 milliamp hour battery pack, about the size of a pack of cigarettes.
Yeah,
and that would charge my phone 10 times.
Okay.
So, yeah.
It's not a solar charger thing.
No.
Just a battery pack.
It's a battery pack. You use it out in the field, and then you charge the battery pack when you're in town.
Yeah. Wow. We're getting, I guess we got about a minute or so left. Any other, you want to commend any of your books to anybody or promote anything while you're here?
Well, I've got the Maine Mountain Guide that I'm already working on the next edition, and Best Day Hikes Along the Maine Coast. So if anybody's interested in that, working on those.
Where would they buy those?
You can get them on Amazon. You can get them at the AMC Outdoors website, that kind of thing. They're pretty much all over. Yep.
And if you want to read Kerry Kish, you can read him in the Northwood Sporting Journal, right, Norm?
Yes, you can.
Yeah, and he's got a great column there called Hiker's Life.
Hiker's Life,
And we appreciate having you aboard.
We're having fun with that, Paul. It's a
great
opportunity.
You're doing a great job.
You. Yep.
And we're looking forward to more columns from you. Great to have you here, and best of luck to you with your vacation. And again, we commend you for the great job you did, and I just have the greatest respect for your perseverance. There, it takes a special man to do what you did, and good for you.
Well, thank you,
That's
guys.
Great.
My pleasure.
Have a nice holiday and a good winter, and we hope we'll have you back real soon.
You bet. Anytime. Thank you.
And how much time we got left, engineer?
About 30 seconds.
About 30 seconds. Well, I want to remind you that on December 15th, Bob will do his big Christmas show.
Right.
Diane and I will be winging south here in a week or so, and Bob is going to take over along with some other co-hosts, and he's got a big Christmas show December 15th.
I do, and be sure and tune in, because a lot of prizes.
A lot of giveaways, right?
We certainly do.
And you're going to do a couple impersonations.
And you're going to call in and do one, too.
I may call in from sunny Florida.
Yes.
And let's see. Next week, our guest is going to be trout activist Bob Mallard, who has a great new book out called Square Tail. And he's a guy who's just loves trout, and we're going to talk. And Bob loves trout,
yeah.
So it should
we
be a
should
good
get
conversation.
Along real well,
right?
Especially on a dinner plate.
Yeah. And we'll see you guys all next week, and gals next week, right here on
Maine Outdoors.